Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at redrock_bball, facebook.com/redrockbasketball. The email address is redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com, and there is the YouTube channel, which is in its infancy. You can head across there and check that out via the links in the Twitter bio or on the website, or by actually going to a new website, which I'm going to give some love to. It's called Fasketball. So I want you to check that website out, fasketball.com. It's basketball spelt with an F. It's a new website that's been set up by one of the listeners to the podcast, Daniel. And I think that you'll really enjoy what's over there. Basically, it's got a number of different features, always expanding. Allows you to do your own custom projections for any NBA player with already projections in there. Does rankings, averages, totals, per minute production, schedule grids, automated injury feeds, ability to check out rankings with certain categories punted, all that sort of thing. And Daniel's constantly adding to the website. So the reason I mentioned that is that Daniel's got the YouTube videos featured over on that website at the moment as well, which is fasketball.com. So I want you to go and check out that. That's Fasketball starting with an F instead of a B. There will be links in the show note, but check out what Daniel's got. It's a lot of great info and more stuff improving, not even just info, but analysis tools, which I think a lot of you will find really handy. I mentioned it yesterday in the YouTube video that I did, which was YouTube video, which I want you to check out as well, which is a video when I was talking about players that I thought had a potential to jump into the top 50 for next season. So players who were outside the top 50 this year, but are jumping into the top 50. I mentioned it on there. A few of you guys have already gone and checked it out and given me some pretty positive feedback on what Daniel's doing. So I want you to go and have a look over at fasketball.com and have a look. You might find something interesting there. It's a lot of the things similar to what is done over at Basketball Monster. Daniel's providing those tools for free, though, so go and have a look and see what's over there and see if there's things that you like, and he's always taking suggestions for ways that the site can be improved and new features to be added. So I really do suggest that you head across, and I reckon that you'll find something there that will be to your advantage. Now, a couple of days out from the 2015 NBA draft, so what I'm going to talk about in this podcast is I'm going to look back at the 2014 NBA draft, not, as I put out on my Twitter yesterday, the 2,914 NBA draft. A lot of people had a bit of fun with that, thinking that I was about able to prophesize 900 years into the future. I will not be predicting the 2,914 NBA draft. Someone had asked me if the Knicks had won a title by then. I'm going to guess no. Sorry, Knicks fans. They probably have. In the next 900 years, the Knicks will probably win a title. But no, 2014 draft, not 2,914 draft. Before I get into that, though, I want to talk about the 2015 draft just for a second, about what the coverage will be like. Now, I'm going to be, as the picks happen, I'm going to be tweeting them out, posting them on the Instagram page, on the Facebook page, with my immediate sort of reactions. Not much, just a few little comments here and there. Straight after the draft is finished, myself and Kyle McEwen will be doing the RotoWire Basketball Fantasy Basketball Podcast draft review. So you can go and hear me straight after the draft with Kyle on the RotoWire podcast. After that, I'll probably do a solo podcast, just a general wrap-up as well. And then what I'll look to do over the next week or so is a real in-depth dive on all these prospects, going into the whoever your team picks, or each team, going into the prospects in detail, focusing in on their strengths and weaknesses, their fantasy value, the minutes projection, a whole heap of things. So there'll be more in-depth review on the NBA draft stuff. But remember, straight after the draft, myself and Kyle will be chopping it up on the RotoWire podcast. I'll do a small review myself, which will be different to probably to the stuff that I say on Kyle's show. And then we'll get into some more in-depth stuff. And then free agency kicks in, and there'll be some free agency podcasts definitely coming your way. So we all had heard about the 2014 draft for probably about 2 years, about how good it was going to be, the players that were going to be in there. It was going to be a superstar draft. Teams were tanking years in advance, blah, 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 to get their hands on these players. And to be honest, it fizzed a bit. And I think that's the way that a lot of drafts are going to go in the NBA now. I feel like there is such an influx of young talent that it takes these players 2 or 3 years to really get themselves going in the league, because it's not like there was a real gap in talent in the league. So there's always guys that are waiting for their turn. And these guys that come in, they have to wait their turn as well, because we've got to wait for the guys that were drafted in 2012, 2013, who have been in the system 2 years and have had their chance to develop. And a lot of these guys, they ease them along. Like, we saw Marcus Smart not get many minutes as a pretty high draft pick. You know, Jabari Parker didn't even play 30 minutes a game. Alfred Payton started the first half of the season on the bench because there are other guys around, other guys who were drafted not long ago. And we're seeing, I feel like we're seeing a lower proportion of busts in players. So there's just a bigger amount of young players in the league, making it harder for a rookie class to have a significant impact straight away. The same thing's going to happen this season. We're going to get a lot of guys coming in to the league through the draft, not many are going to have a big fantasy impact. When I look back at last season, only one guy out of the guys who were rookies had a season where they were a top 100 player on head-to-head per game value. And that player wasn't even drafted in 2014. That was Nerlens Noel. So no one became a top 100 player in head-to-head value last season. Roto leagues, a little bit different. Andrew Wiggins jumped inside the top 100 in roto value per game. He came in at 83rd. We'll talk about him in a sec. But overall, not many guys that you had to consider must-own for the duration of the season. Yeah, there were plenty of guys that were must-own at certain stages during the season, but not necessarily for the entire season. I think that's worth bearing in mind when we look ahead to the 2015 NBA draft. All right, let's start looking back at this 2014 draft. We'll start at number one with Andrew Wiggins. And I mentioned that he did end up being quite a handy roto player. Overall, his values were pretty okay for the season, but he didn't start off the season that well. And a lot of his numbers were impressive because he played every game and he played so many minutes. His head-to-head per game value only came in at 129th. So that's, you know, for the course of the season, that's not a must-own 10-team league guy. Now, by the end of the season, he was, and he put up some, you know, pretty impressive numbers. But for the stretch of November and December, he wasn't a good player. In November, he was ranked 225th in head-to-head value. In December, he was 210th. Roto, 180, 182nd. That's not good. Now, every other month after that, he was inside the top 150 in both head-to-head and roto leagues. And most of those months, he was inside the top 100. But he started off the season really, really slow. And we see he had, look, January is when things really started to kick off for Wiggins, and he showed what he can do. And overall, his numbers look okay for a total perspective. But as I mentioned, that's because he played every game. His ranking per 36 minutes for the season is 315th because he played so many minutes. Now, I'm not saying he's not going to be a good player. We saw plenty of stretches where he was a significant player. In January, he was the 30th ranked roto player. In April, he was the 29th ranked roto player, the 41st ranked head-to-head player. These are all good numbers. And I think there's a very good chance that Wiggins becomes a top 50 guy next year. And I think you're probably going to have to draft him inside the top 50. I don't think you're going to be able to get him for much of a steal when we're talking about drafting it for next season. A guy that I think you will get as a bit of a steal will be Jabari Parker because he's coming off the ACL injury. Now, with Ersan Ilyasova out, he's gone from Milwaukee to Detroit. I thought there was going to be a bit of a minute squish and they'd have more of a chance to bring Parker on slowly. Now the Bucks front court is not, it's not thick. There's not a lot of guys there. They could bring someone in with the 17th pick, but they're not going to really contribute a huge amount immediately. So they're going to hope that Parker's ready to play 29 minutes a game. And he was really starting to come good before that injury. In December, he was the 117th ranked player in head-to-head leagues, 120th in roto leagues. So he's pretty comparable in terms of both formats as to where his ranking is. And for the course and for the season, 136 total. 136 in per game value in head-to-head, 106th in roto. So what do we think the future is for Jabari Parker? I think it's pretty good. He shot a much better percentage than what I anticipated he would. He didn't shoot anywhere near as many threes. He's going to need to improve that or add that to his game. His steal numbers were mighty impressive. I don't think he'd get anywhere near the amount of steals that he ended up getting last season. He averaged 1.2 steals a game, and he shot 49% from the field. Two things that really surprised me with his game. And the 12.3 points and the 5.5 rebounds, I think we see a pretty significant increase in those, especially the points next season. And he'll be a guy that almost no doubt to me will be inside the top 100. Now, the third pick in the draft was Joel Embiid. Obviously, we haven't seen him on the court yet, and there's that worry now with the foot setback that we might not see him again next season, and that's obviously very, very worrying in terms of his future. Did the Sixers waste a pick? The rebuilding plan in disarray. There's a lot of problems with Embiid's foot. When he plays, I think he's going to be a really fantastic fantasy prospect, but it's going to be really hard to draft him. If you're drafting now, which you shouldn't be, but if you're drafting now for fantasy leagues, it's almost impossible to pick Joel Embiid in a standard type league because we don't know what we're going to get from him. If he's going to play, how many games he's going to play, a whole bunch of things that we don't really know about. So that is a little bit of a bummer with that third pick. The fourth pick in the draft was Aaron Gordon. Now, here's where I'm a little bit cautious about a player. I don't really think that Aaron Gordon's a great player. Never at any stage during the season did Aaron Gordon get himself inside the top 250. Sorry, inside the top 200. He never, at one stage, first, so talking for the total value, head-to-head, or roto, per game value, and I've also broken down all these rankings into per month. So November, December, January, February, March, April, never once in any of those months did Aaron Gordon find himself in the top 200. Yes, he dealt with a foot injury. He had that foot break problem. But overall, he's just, I don't think he projects as a great fantasy player. That's my opinion. Other people, you know, could easily have a different point of view on him. But even his per 36 numbers were not all that impressive. He came in 291st in per 36, averaging 5 points a game, 3.5 rebounds. Look, he hit 0.3 threes a game, but he did it 27%. So that's not a shot you want to be encouraging at 27%. 72% on his free throws, 72, is a lot better than what we anticipated, but half a block, half a steal. Yeah, with more minutes, these could be okay numbers, but they're only 10 and 7, a steal and a block. They're not great when we're talking, you know, 34 minutes. That's not fantastic numbers. I definitely think he can get better, but with the rumors that the Magic are looking to grab Kristaps Porzingis, where does that leave Gordon in the future? If they re-sign Toby Harris, where does that leave Gordon? I don't think we're ever going to see Aaron Gordon as being a top 100 fantasy player, and we didn't see any real signs of it this season at all, I don't think. At number 5, another guy who was very disappointing, Dante Exum of the Utah Jazz. His season, obviously not a great one. He did get the starting job, and the thing that really gives me great confidence with Dante is that as a point guard, he was a real positive contributor as a defender. Now, that doesn't help in fantasy leagues. Like Aaron Gordon, he never once cracked the top 200 in any sort of format last season. Head-to-head in roto leagues, he was a pretty similar sort of guy. His numbers ended up, you know, pretty similar across the board. 320th per game in head-to-head, 329th in rotisserie value. But just, there wasn't a lot to love. Less than 5 points in 22 minutes. He hit a three a game, which was a shock to me. But I think what we'll see is he shot 35% last season. We should see that at 40-42, which will be a big help. Yeah, his defense will still be there, so the steals will start coming. The assists should start coming. I think that Dante definitely cracks the top 200 next season. It depends on whether the Jazz go and looking to bring in a veteran point guard, because they are showing a lot of signs of being a real team to push for the playoffs if they've got that steady point guard presence. I don't know if Exum's going to be that steady guy next season, and I think that if you're in a dynasty league, he's a very, very long-term prospect, maybe 3 years away as a top 5 pick, and that's hard to really invest in that. Now, I know Mark Roberts, who was on the podcast the other day talking, doing the mock draft with me, was really high on Dante Exum and what he projected out as a rookie last season. That didn't come to fruition, but he still is pretty happy with Dante Exum and thinks he can be a useful fantasy contributor. I just don't think it's going to be next season. So I don't. He's not a guy. Look, guys make big jumps in their second season. I think he makes a big jump, but he doesn't make a big enough jump to become a player where in 12 team leagues you need to look at him. Marcus Smart, though, on the other hand, was impressive at times during the season. I think a lot of people ended up being disappointed in what he brought to the table, but he was a pretty impressive player. He had a lot of months where he was inside the top 150 for his total value. He ended up as the 140th head-to-head player. Roto, not quite as good. He was the 173rd Roto per game player, so a much better head-to-head guy, and that's to do with his percentages. But down the stretch, from January onwards, after the Rajon Rondo deal, he did not slip out. So his lowest rank was 155 for each month. Didn't get himself inside the top 100 at any stage, but he was in that range where you think that next season, with a year under his belt, playing alongside Isaiah Thomas, which is going to impact Smart scoring, but that's not what he's there for. Playing alongside Thomas in a pretty comfortable role, he's like Like Exum, his defensive numbers and plus minus and that were fairly good. I think he's got a pretty good chance to be a top 100 player next season, and he's going to be a real valuable fantasy guy moving forward. The 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.5 steals, 1.5 threes last season is really impressive, and it's easy to build upon. So I really like Marcus Smart heading into next season. I think if I was drafting for fantasy, he's one of the top prospects in this league. Julius Randle, we don't know. He played one game, he didn't do much. Now, broken leg, he'll be back, but so many rumors swirling about what the Lakers are going to do with the pick, the Boogie Cousins trade issues. And I'll just touch on that quickly. If Boogie Cousins gets traded to Sacramento or a joke, they're beyond a joke already. But if he happens to get traded, and if they don't get a decent return, I don't know what they're doing. I tweeted out the other day, there was a rumor that Denver sending Ty Lawson, Kenneth Faried, and pick 7 to Sacramento for Boogie Cousins. And to me, that is ludicrous. That is way too low for Cousins. But the amount of people I saw responding to this rumor saying that it was that Sacramento would be the winner by getting Faried and Lawson. And that's just not the case, in my opinion. Lawson is an average point guard, and there are so many of them out there. Faried is one of the more overrated players in the league. None of these guys add up to Boogie Cousins at all. To me, it's a ludicrous proposal, but Sacramento is that stupid that something like that could actually go through, which worries me. Now, back to Julius Randle. His game doesn't project well from a fantasy point of view. He projects as a points guy, he projects as a rebounds guy, and he projects as a nothing else guy. I think this is basically going to be his rookie season coming up. He won't shoot the ball well. He's not a good free throw shooter. There's no steals, no assists, no blocks, no threes, points and rebounds. And then if Jahlil Okafor is there, he's going to take his points. He's going to take a lot of his rebounds. He's not a standard league guy to me. I don't think that he has significant upside for Dynasty. He's got upside enough where at some point in his career, he will be a top 100 fantasy player. I don't think he'll ever be a top 30 guy, a top 40 guy, or a top 50 guy. He'll be a guy that at his peak sits at the 70s or 80s. I think that's probably the right spot for Julius Randle, which is okay, but just be wary when you're investing in him in your Dynasty or even your redraft leagues for next season. Coming off the board at number 8, which was a real odd pick at the time, and didn't end up being a great decision by the Sacramento Kings, shockingly enough. Nick Stauskas, Sauce Castillo, he struggled a lot. He was clearly the backup to Ben McLemore. McLemore really started to flourish last season, so I don't really know what Stauskas' role is going to be on this team. Maybe there's a trade possibility for some reason. Rene Dive absolutely loves Nick Stauskas. Again, he's not a player who ever found himself inside the top 200 during any month of the season. A pretty even head-to-head and roto split. Just nothing for me to really get excited about. As a guy who was supposed to be the best three-point shooter in the draft, he shot 32% and 37% from the field. Yeah, he'll get better, but I don't see him unseating McLemore anytime in the future. So to me, I think that's a real wasted pick. He could go somewhere else and thrive. To me, at this point, Nick Stauskas is a real wasted pick for Sacramento, and he'd be a wasted pick in a fantasy league as well. Another wasted pick, in my opinion, was Noah Vonleh to the Charlotte Hornets. They already had Cody Zeller there, who they could groom to do the same thing. They brought Marvin Williams in to do the exact same thing, and Vonleh never really got going. He played only 25 games and 10 minutes a game. But did we see anything that was worthwhile looking at? Well, not really. Nothing really stood out to me. He ended up per game 384th in head-to-head, 396th in roto, barely ever got inside the top 200 for a monthly split, and when he did, it was just inside the top 290, so nothing really too exciting. And again, with Zeller there, who's a top 4 pick from 2 years ago, Williams is there with still one more season to go on his contract. We've got Spencer Hawes that's just come in a trade as well, who plays a stretch 4 or stretch 5. I don't know what the point of Vonleh being there is. He could be traded. He could develop more than Cody Zeller. Maybe they give up on Cody Zeller. Maybe they cut Spencer Hawes. There's not a lot for me to love with Noah Vonleh and his prospects. They don't appear too bright to me. Lord Alfred Payton, though, was very, very impressive towards the end of last season. Like Andrew Wiggins, and like pretty much every rookie's going to be, he struggled early on. But down the stretch, he put up some superb numbers. And I think the thing that really impresses me about what he did, now, per game he was the 100th ranked player in head-to-head leagues. In Roto, he was 156, so there is a big gap. But down the stretch, what I really love for him, in when we get to March, 52 in head-to-head, 73 in Roto. Not a big gap. April, 22nd ranked player in head-to-head leagues in April, 35th in Roto leagues. That's it's closing in. January, 72 and 77. And that's because his percentages, they got better. And I think that that's a great sign. Now, he only shot 43 and 55 for the season, but it's getting better. You're never going to get threes from him. That's not going to happen. But you're going to get big assists, big rebounds, okay points, good steal numbers. And that's enough to be a useful fantasy player. It's not enough to be a star fantasy player. It's not enough to be a top 40 fantasy player because you're not contributing in enough categories to do that. And you'd have to, for him to go out there, he'd have to average 10 rebounds a game, 15 assists a game, 2 steals a game in those categories to be a guy where you go, in a head-to-head league, I've got to take you in the top 50. For what he's giving at the moment, he's a nice back-end point guard. I do fear that many people are going to overdraft him. Maybe because of that end to the season. Now, look at that head-to-head. He ranked 22nd in April, so I say that it's hard for him to be a top 50 player. He has shown that he can do it. Can he do it over a prolonged period of time? Probably not. In a head-to-head league, though, I'd be happy taking him not inside the top 50, probably anywhere between 60 and 80. And I think that's probably the right spot for him. But he could have a real big improvement next season. And we could see the way that he finished off that season, March and April, as being maybe more of the norm for him than the rubbish start of the season that he had. And you can't blame that all on him. He was benched to start the season with Luke Ridnour starting in front of him. Evan Fournier starting in front of him. That won't happen next season. If you saw my Chicago Bulls video or my Chicago Bulls podcast, if you listened to that, you know that I'm excited for what Doug McDermott can do under Fred Hoiberg. I think that McDermott was underused by Tom Thibodeau. He played 36 games at 9 minutes a game, 3 points a game. His shot was not good, 32% from 3, 40% from the field. But I think there's a fair bit to like about McDermott next season. A bit of it depends on what they do with Mike Dunleavy, whether they bring him back or not. But I think that there is a lot to like about McDermott. Now, his numbers just do not jump off the page at all. He was 452nd in head-to-head per game value, 445th in roto value. But that could be a significant jump to me inside the top 250 next season, potentially even inside the top 200. It's definitely something to look at in terms of your deep league or your dynasty sort of formats. I think there is a great opportunity opening up for Doug McDermott next season. Dario Saric was the 12th pick. We're not going to see him. We didn't see him last season. We're not going to see him next season. I still think that he has good dynasty league value, but that's not being realized until the 2016 season, so we can don't need to talk about him too much. Zach LaVine was impressive, but you have to remember the sort of circumstances that allowed him to be impressive. Now, his numbers were good. He ended the season in April as the 28th ranked head-to-head player and the 20th ranked roto player. But that's because everything was given to him. He was given big minutes. There was no one else around. The whole team was injured, basically. And that obviously suited what he was able to do. Now, surprisingly to me, he was a better roto player than he was a head-to-head player. 200 head-to-head, 177 roto. And I think that probably holds. I think that does probably hold for him. He was definitely a lot better than I anticipated. But he's not going to get 25 minutes a game if Ricky Rubio is healthy. If Kevin Martin's still there, which he might not be. And it looked like LaVine needed the ball in his hands to really succeed. And again, if Rubio's there, he's not going to have the ball in his hands and he's not going to be able to get that sort of usage and hold onto the ball that much if Rubio's fit and healthy. He's going to play a backup role and that's going to be fine for leagues, 14 teams. But standard leagues, I don't think there's much you're going to be able to do with Zach LaVine unless injuries fall again. Kevin Martin goes down, Ricky Rubio goes down, someone gets traded, who knows? LaVine's going to be a useful backup, but I don't think he's going to be a player. He's definitely not going to be the guy who was a top 30 guy in April. And he's not going to be that player who, when we look at his season numbers, who was inside the top. He might even replicate that top 200 finish that he had last season. I think that's probably a bit of a stretch for him. So I think that he may get overdrafted. I think he's going to be overvalued in dynasty leagues. I would be trying to trade him off if I had him in a dynasty league because this could very well be the best sort of performance he ever has. Like, he could always get a starting job somewhere down the line, but I wouldn't be shocked if this is the peak, Zach LaVine, as much as he's a younger player, everything fell into his lap in terms of you've got to go out there, Zach, and you've got to play every single minute in the backcourt, basically, and therefore the numbers are going to come. The likelihood of that happening again, it's not all that high, I wouldn't have thought. His per 36 numbers do look okay, though. 194, that's much better than Andrew Wiggins' 315, so there is a little bit of hope for him, and you look across some of the numbers, they're pretty good. It's just opportunity for me that is, it's hard to get a read on. Pick 14, TJ Warren, didn't really have much of an opportunity to impress us, but he did impress me in certain situations. And in April, he was the 186th ranked roto player. Now, the Suns are going to be rebuilding. You would think they would love to get rid of the Morris twins, I think, because of their off-field issues. A lot of disciplinary problems with this team. You hear talks of them trying to trade Eric Bledsoe. A lot of things happening. And Warren's a guy who can score. He can get to the rim. He can score. He can't shoot, but he can score. He's not a guy who's going to hit threes, only 0.1 threes a game, but he's going to get scoring. 53% shooting and 74% from the line is great, and that's because he only takes easy shots, but he has a knack of getting to the rim. 6 points, 2 rebounds. Yeah, he can be better than the 322nd rank that he had. We saw that he was able to do that down the stretch. You know, 216th in March, 227th in April for head-to-head leagues. You know, 228 and 186 for roto leagues. He can be that guy, and I think he's a 14 to, well, probably a 16-team league guy, depending on what sort of moves the Suns make. And I think he, at some stage, he could be a standard league guy. I just don't know if there's a huge amount of value in him unless he does learn to shoot as a wing. We've seen guys like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. It really limits them when they're wing players who can't hit a three or can't hit a decent jumper to stretch the floor. It does limit their ability to stay on the court, and he's nowhere near the defender that Kidd-Gilchrist is, so he doesn't have that string in his bow. Adrian Payne, a disappointing season for him. Started with Atlanta, who drafted him, didn't last there, was traded to Minnesota for a future first-round draft pick, and in a similar situation to Zach LaVine, when he was forced to start because there was no one else around, he was okay. In March, he was the 180th ranked roto player, 203rd in head-to-head leagues. I think that's probably better than most people could have anticipated. But with Karl Anthony Towns most likely coming in, with Gorgui Dieng developing, maybe we see Nikola Pekovic, who knows, Anthony Bennett hopefully having a better season. I don't know if there's much to get excited about as an Adrian Payne owner. I do like him. I think he's a pretty decent player. He can develop into maybe a stretch four sort of guy, not necessarily holding my breath, but not a lot to like from Adrian Payne that we saw last season. Number 16, my boy Yusuf Nurkic. He had a very impressive season at times. Melvin Hunt did not like him, but I'm glad that Melvin Hunt's gone, that we got Mike Malone there, and Mike Malone can give Nurkic some run. Now, he was pretty dominant at times, Nurkic, from a real perspective and from a fantasy perspective. We saw, I'm looking at my rankings here, and I've got anytime someone finishes inside the top 100 in red, anytime they're between, sorry, top 150 in red, anywhere between the top 150 and 200, they're in green. There's a lot of red on Nurkic's line. Yeah, through January and February, he was inside the worst rank he had was 114th. Inside the top 100 all of February, just head-to-head 96th in January. Some pretty good numbers from Yusuf Nurkic. His per 36 numbers ranked him 92nd because he was able to put up big numbers in limited minutes. 6.9 points, 6.2 rebounds, almost a steal, over a block in 18 minutes a game. That is sure to go up. He is a very, very valuable piece. I've got almost no... He should be drafted in every standard league next season. Whether that's in, you know, at pick 100 or pick 110, I don't care. But the ability that he has to be a fantasy impact guy who gets steals, gets blocks, gets points, gets rebounds, it's very, very tantalizing. And I think there's a lot of value in Yusuf Nurkic. But I'm not the only one. A lot of people think that, and that makes it hard to pry him from a dynasty league owner's hands. Pick 16, James Young. We didn't really see anything from James Young at all. Nothing to really get me too excited in terms of his rankings or his numbers or anything like that. Look, he could develop. I think he's a few years away from developing in Boston. It's not like they have many players, though, at his position. So there is an opportunity for him to grow, but his shooting was really, really poor. 26 from 3, 35 from the field, 55 from the line. I think he can be a decent player. It's going to be a couple of seasons. I think 2016 is the time where we want to look to James Young to start to develop. Tyler Ennis was picked at 18. He was traded from Phoenix to Milwaukee, and he's in a better situation in Milwaukee, backing up Michael Carter-Williams. There's not many players there in terms of backups, and if something happens to Carter-Williams, which you've seen happen often, he can be an okay player. In the last couple of months when he was over in Minnesota, his numbers, not Minnesota, Milwaukee, 214th in March, 214th in April, inside the top 100 for his roto value in April. Just playing that nice backup role with the occasional start. And when he gets a start, he's a guy that you want to look at in your standard type leagues, in your 12-team leagues. Aside from that, I don't even think he's going to overtake Carter Williams as the point guard that this team wants. But deeper leagues need to pay attention to him. 20-team leagues, anything deeper than that, Tyler Ennis is going to have a much bigger role playing in Milwaukee than the role that he had playing in Phoenix when there were so many other point guards there. So he does have a bit of a chance to develop. In Milwaukee, especially under Jason Kidd, could really bring his game out to another level, to a level, maybe that's the best way of putting it. The next guy I want to take a look at is the next pick in the draft, and that is a very good question. Who was it? It was Gary Harris. Didn't really see much for him in Denver. He had his head-to-head value in November spikes up to me at 138. And I go, okay, That's interesting. That's when they still had Brian Shaw there. It was before Melvin Hunt came in. What are we going to get from Gary Harris next season? He didn't provide a lot to us. 13 minutes, 55 games, that's okay. But nothing stood out to me from his games at all. He can shoot. We saw it in summer league. We've seen it in college. Didn't provide it for us last season at all. But I think there's a little bit there. We saw there in November, he got to that 138th. So he had a couple of decent games. And there's something to like about him. I think that's the best way that I can put it. There is a little bit of something there for him, and it's not like the Nuggets have got that two guard position tied down by anybody really at all. There's a number of players who can get into that spot and get minutes in that role without a definite star sort of in the way. Next up, Bruno Caboolo at number 20 from the Raptors. Again, it's another player we didn't see much of. I really like Bruno's future. It might be a couple of years away, and he only played 8 games this year, 3 minutes a game. Be interesting to see how he fares in Summer League, which is coming up soon. I don't think he's going to play a huge part in the Raptors' season in this coming season, but I think there's definitely a lot to like about Bruno. Whether he ever realizes that potential, I've got no idea. I'd love to be able to tell you that already, but I've got no clue at this point. And the fact is, I think he can be a standard league guy. He can be a top 150 player at some point in his career. That's probably not going to be next season. He did have in November, he was ranked 145th in head-to-head, but realize he played just 8 games across the season, so this is not a big sample size. All his other ranks pretty much were in the 400. So he had a good November, not much else in all the other months, but it shows that he does have a little bit of potential. His numbers are okay. We can expect some decent performances from him at some point in his career. We just don't know exactly when that will be. At 21, we had Mitch McGarry, who was, I'm not going to say a star, but he was a star at times. He had some really impact performances. Per 36, he was ranked 138th for the season. He had a really strong February where he climbed inside the top 200, but there's just too many bodies in Oklahoma City. We're going to have Enes Kanter brought back. There's going to be Serge Ibaka there. And there's 60 to 70 minutes out of the front court already. That leaves 20 minutes maybe for him. And you've still got Steven Adams. Well, not even 20 minutes for him. There's like 20 minutes left over. And there's still Steven Adams there. So he's going to get minimal minutes. But he's going to be in a point where if he goes to another team, or if there isn't a long-term injury or someone doesn't get re-signed like Kanter, he puts up numbers. He puts them up in a big way when he is on the court. Blocks, steals, points, rebounds, pretty decent percentages in general as well. And he was like that way in college. He's able to put up pretty good numbers on a per-minute basis. So the 6 points, 5 rebounds, half a steal, half a block in 15 minutes is pretty impressive in my opinion. So he's someone to watch for. But the situation, it's not like anything is just opening up, coming up for him. There's going to be a big role for him or anything like that. The next player, Jordan Adams, I think there is a big role for him next season. The Grizzlies need someone to shoot. Courtney Lee's not the guy. Jeff Green's not the guy. Tony Allen sure isn't the guy for shooting. He's a defensive guy. And there's got to be a bigger role for Jordan Adams coming up at some point. He did basically nothing. And that's terrible because he should have been able to do a lot more. 8 minutes a game, 3 points a game, 0.3 triples, but he hit his threes at 40%. He hit his field goals at 41%, but I'm more looking at the three-pointers at 40%. Again, it's small sample size, but I think that he got half a steal in 8 minutes. We're talking a guy who can be a 3-and-D guy. He can hit 1 to 1.5 threes a game. He can get 1 to 1.5 steals a game. 10, 12 points, 2-3 rebounds, something like that. That becomes useful for deeper leagues, 14-team leagues, something like that. And I think the opportunity for him to really take that upon himself and realize that potential is coming up this season. He's going to be a guy that I think takes a significant leap. There were no months where he really shone out or had a real breakout because he just didn't get enough time in Memphis. But I think that I'm not saying that he's going to be a draftable player in most leagues, but dynasty leagues want to be taking a look at him. And I think that by the second half of the season, he might be a player where you're going to have to start looking at him in standard leagues. Now, the next player to look at is Rodney Hood, and he was a guy who was very impressive down the stretch. He moved into the starting lineup, and the second half of the season, really good. March, ranked 163rd in head-to-head leagues, but April, he was ranked 71st, 42nd in roto leagues. That's a big jump for Rodney Hood based on he was injured at the start of the season. Now, we're going to have the return of Alec Burks, which is going to impact his minutes with Burks back, but they don't have to be married to Burks at the two. I think Hood can play some decent minutes there. Joe Ingles is also around, who had a pretty decent season. But I think that Hood is going to be a top 150 player next season for the majority of the season. He showed enough to me for them to go, yeah, he's going to have a role as a 25 to 26 minute a game guy off the bench. He could even start over Burks, and they could run Burks as a combo guard. This team is really intriguing to me, Utah, what they do on draft day in free agency and trades, because let's look at the guys. Trey Burke, Dante Exum, Alec Burks, Rodney Hood, Joe Ingles, Gordon Hayward, Trevor Booker, Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert. There's a lot of talent there. And these guys, you feel like there's no real game changers apart from maybe Gobert and Hayward. But Burke, Exum, Hood, they're all guys who have got enough value, but they're going to be squeezed for minutes. So it depends on how it all shakes out. But if someone leaves, I really like Rodney Hood to have a pretty big second season, and I think that will translate what he did at the second half of his rookie season into his second year in the NBA. At 24, Shabazz Napier. Not a huge Shabazz Napier fan, to be honest, especially with Goran Dragic likely to re-sign in Miami. Now, he had a couple of games a couple of months where he put up some decent numbers. Norris Cole's gone, which is good because he's useless. 188th for Napier in November in head-to-head, 161 in Roto. A couple of other small breakout performances, but again, Dragic is there, Chalmers is there, although we are hearing rumors of Chalmers about to be traded. So that could put Napier into the primary backup point guard role, which would make his value rise significantly. And we saw that he can have some decent numbers, so that would put him into consideration to me to 16-team leagues, maybe 14-team leagues. So it'd be someone to keep an eye on, depending on what happens with Mario Chalmers. So we just need to keep an eye on that. But I think that Napier can improve. I just don't love him as a prospect. Clint Capela at 25 was fantastic in the playoffs. Really, really impressive. Didn't do anything pretty much in the regular season. I don't think we need to pay too much attention to his regular season. His free throw percentage was pathetic in the regular season. It was a lot better in the playoffs. There's a lot to like about him. Now, the Houston front court is pretty crowded if they bring back Josh Smith. There's Donatas Motiejunas, there's Terrence Jones, there's Dwight Howard, there's Joey Dorsey. Ooh, yuck. But one of these guys is going to be gone. Probably Smith. He'll likely be gone. Joey Dorsey offers nothing. And Capela is a guy that showed he can block shots, he can get rebounds, he can get a high field goal percentage, and his free throws did improve. So I think that for him, for deeper leagues and dynasty leagues, I really, really liked what he was able to do. He was actually 221st in post All-Star ranking. And his March ranking in head-to-head leagues, he was ranked 64th. I think that would surprise a lot of people. If you looked at his playoff numbers, they'd be even better. So he's a guy that I think was very impressive. PJ Hairston went at 26 to the Charlotte Hornets. And like Rodney Hood, he's in a situation where he can absorb minutes, or maybe not, maybe like Jordan Adams more, a team that needs someone to shoot threes, and he can do it. He didn't have the most successful season doing it last year, but he still hit over one a game in his 15 minutes. Converted them only at 30%, but what is really impressive is that he converted his free throws at 86%, and that's a really good indicator of someone who can be a good three-point shooter. So I do like Hairston's ability to get a bigger role next season. He had a nice stretch in February where he was the 116th ranked player in head-to-head leagues. In March, he was 199, so he did get better as the season progressed. And with Lance Stephenson out of the picture and the desperate need they have for three-point shooters, along with Hairston having 1 year in the system, bit of a breakout for me, I think, PJ Hairston next season. I think that there's a reason to believe that taking him in the last round of a 12-team league would not be a stupid move. The next player is Bogdanović, who did not play and will not play again next season, so let's forget about him. CJ Wilcox, we can pretty much forget about him also. He did nothing for the Clippers. Now, they do need bench depth. He wasn't able to provide it last season at all. I still think there's a little bit to like about him, but we just didn't see it. Now, whether we see it this season with you know, Matt Barnes going, but yeah, Stevenson's brought in, it's going to be very hard, I think, to really like or to really get excited about CJ Wilcox. I don't think there's much in terms of dynasty value for him moving forward. Josh Huestis was taken by the Oklahoma City Thunder at pick 29. We didn't see him. He went to the D League. Even if he plays, there's not a lot to like about him. And Kyle Anderson with the last pick in the draft. I really like Kyle Anderson. I think that there's a ton of value for him in fantasy leagues. Points, assists, rebounds, and steals. I think he can do a lot. I really think that you have to be you're talking deep and you have to be investing in the future in a dynasty league. He never really showed us anything last year, but in 2 or 3 years, Kyle Anderson's going to be a name that all basketball fans are going to want to know because there's a lot to like about him. All right, let's look at the second round. I'm going to just briefly touch on a couple of plays here. Damian Inglis didn't play at all last season. I really like Damian Inglis's game now. There's so much depth in Milwaukee that it's going to be hard for him to have a lot of value. Still like him a lot. The other guys who were picked, KJ McDaniels really struggled. Did he miss his chance to excel? It's quite possible. Joe Harris was next. Don't like him. Cle'Anthony Early, I do like. I think at 34, pick 34, it was a pretty decent bargain for him. Now, with Carmelo Anthony back, the minutes are going to be a little bit more limited for him, but he should improve. He should be able to be a bit more consistent. So I think that the dynasty leagues will want to pay a little bit more attention to Cle'Anthony Early. Jahnel Stokes, Johnny O'Brien next. Not much to like about them. DeAndre Daniels picked Toronto 37. He played in Australia this season. Apparently, he's going to be back and playing for the Raptors, and they do have a hole on the wing, so he could be a sneaky deep league guy. So keep an eye on DeAndre Daniels. Spencer Dinwiddie, I really like as a point guard in Detroit. Jeremy Grant, he can block shots and hit threes, and I think he could be a sneaky valuable player for deeper leagues. I don't think he's a standard league guy by any chance. When we get down, there's not many names in the rest of this list that inspire a lot of confidence. Nikola Jokic at 41. Can't wait to see him coming across to Denver. Now, there was all this talk about Denver trades. We don't know what Jokic is going to do, but I can't wait to see him. He'll be a 16-team league guy for sure next season if he's across, or someone to take a gamble on in the 16-team league anyway. Jordan Clarkson's probably the one we want to talk about the most out of this second round. Picked at pick 46, he was one of the better rookies for the season. In a great situation for him in LA, he ended up remarkably. February, 89 and 59 is his head-to-head roto split. March, 102-67. April, 27-16. Now, he's basically getting minutes with no competition from anyone. With Kobe back, he's not going to have the ball in his hand. Depending on what other moves the Lakers make, it might be hard for him to approach that sort of value, but it's going to be hard to avoid drafting him. You have to draft him in standard leagues. That's what I'm trying to get at. But I think people are going to take him too high. They're going to look at Jordan Clarkson and go, let's pick him at pick 70. And maybe that's a bit high to me. I think with Kobe coming back, I think with Okafor there, I think with Randall back, the points are going to dry up. Maybe he gets more assists, but I think the points and the shot attempts will dry up a bit. Plus, they could also bring in someone like Rajon Rondo, which would be ludicrously stupid, but it's a possibility. It is the Lakers. It's going to be hard. I might take a flyer and pick 70, but you know what? I'd probably end up leaving him alone. depending on what happens in free agency in the draft, there's a lot to go under the bridge, but he was fantastic, and I think he's a really good player. And I think that the Lakers should build around him as a point guard. Not build around him, but build around him going, look, you know what, we've got our point guard position sorted. 2016-17, when Kobe's most likely gone and retired, then we might see a return to this top 60 sort of Jordan Clarkson. That's when I'd be investing in him. So for dynasty leagues, if he starts off slow next season and struggles, that's when I'm trying to acquire him, because I think the next season is when his value really starts to jump up. I reckon that's it for the class of 2014. There were some other rookies who weren't drafted that really turned on some pretty impressive performances. Joe Ingles had a couple of... in January, he was ranked inside the top 100 for head-to-head and roto leagues for his ability to hit three-pointers. Tariq Black was an undrafted guy who was inside the top 150 for the last month of the season. Kostas Papanikolaou started off the season well. We don't know if he's going to be back in the league with the Rockets still deciding to pick up his option or not. Nikola Mirotic, we know about him. He wasn't drafted in 2014, but he was a rookie. I covered him pretty much in depth in the Bulls podcast. And if any trades go down, which it appears the Bulls, you know, there's a lot of rumors about that, then I will start. Then I'll talk some more Mirotic. But if the minutes open up, he's a top 50 fantasy player pretty much. In March, when they had all the injuries, 29th in head-to-head leagues, 23rd in roto leagues, and that is definitely worth noticing. But as the fourth banana in the front court, that's not top 100 worthy, in my opinion anyway. All right, that's it, guys, for my review of the 2014 NBA draft. I can't wait for the 2015 draft. I'm going to be talking about it with Kyle McEwen on the RotoWire podcast. I'm going to be tweeting out, Facebooking out, Instagramming out all the picks on all of my accounts. I'll probably do a short YouTube video that night as well as a podcast. And then we get into more in-depth stuff as the coming weeks and as we head into free agency. A reminder to check out Fasketball, which is basketball spelt with an F, for some free tools and analysis stuff that Daniel has put together. Really encourage you guys to check that out. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher. Leave a review, leave a ranking. Follow me, subscribe to me, all those sort of things, you know, or maybe you don't know, but it does help me immensely when you guys do all of that. So I do really appreciate everybody doing that so far. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.